Hello and welcome to Board Stupid, the podcast that loves talking tabletop board games, D&D, and other awesome stuff. I'm Wayne.
I'm Simon.
And I'm Tom.
Tom.
And I just realised I forgot to edit one line in the script that introduced Karen and Nick.
Oh, interesting.
Who aren't here, but we're...
We're fine just talking. Tom is needs words in front of
him. There we go, there we go. Yeah. Trying it.
Good. Well, we're just nerds talking about the things we love that are worth geeking out over. And we are talking from a new location as I've moved house.
Where am I?
Yeah, exactly. I've locked you in my new...
Sunny, well, not so sunny, Worthing.
Yeah, it's quite grey and windy Worthing right now. Anyway, Simon, are you ready?
Yeah.
Tom, are you ready?
I am.
And I'm ready. If you guys are ready, let's dive in to this week's episode. This week, we played Orichalcum. We Played is a series where we talk about an epic board game that we played this week. And this week, it's the monster-slaying, temple-building, tile-laying, ancient Greek brain-burner, Orichalcum. In this episode, we're going to dive into the things we liked and break down all the things that make it great. Because at the end of the day, we only play awesome games. And Orichalcum is a crunchy slice of 4X light mythology. Orichalcum is a tense and fast-paced strategy game similar to a short 4X. Each player has their own island board to explore and develop, and on each turn they choose a set of one exploration tile and one action. You can either recruit some hoplites or produce some orichalcum, which is a legendary metal from Greek mythology, or construct buildings which will grant you powerful bonuses. Or you can try to get rid of the monsters that infest your island. To win, you need to erect majestic temples, forge orichalcum tokens, or win the favours of the titans. The first of 5 victory points wins the game. Orichalcum plays 2-4 players. It's designed by Bruno Catala and Johannes Gopi. The art is by Paul Maffion. And the publisher is Catch Up Games through Hachette Games UK. Playtime is 45 to 60 minutes and has an MSRP of around £35, which is pretty good.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, there's plenty of places online you can get it around that price. I think, strictly speaking, the RRP is slightly more, but you can always get it cheaper.
You can always get it cheaper. I went through a lot of stuff there. Plays 45 to 60 minutes. Accurate?
Yes, very much so, I'd say. It is a snappy game.
I mean, even the first time we played it, not knowing any of the rules, with a teach, it was probably still less than 60 minutes.
Yeah.
I think it's literally bang on the money, I think.
More or less.
Yeah, there was 4 of us at UKGE, surrounded by 10,000 people or more, squashed into the smallest space possible, going, oh yeah, okay, that does that.
It works pretty well, actually, at 45, 60 minutes, very accurate. 2-4 players, plays pretty well at the 4-player count that we've played at, and at 3 very well as well.
Have you tried it at 2 yet?
I've not played it as a pair, no. I don't know if it'd be quite as good.
I think heads up would be a significantly different play style.
Just because the way the market works,
are there different
maybe.
Rules for 2 players?
There may well be, Mike, to be honest with you. I haven't played it at 2, I haven't looked into it. I've played it a lot at 3 and 4.
Because I feel like things like how the first player marker and stuff like that just wouldn't really make sense with 2 players.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. But we'll see, we'll find out. And £35 or your local equivalent, that's pretty good value, right? Based on what you get in a box. Anyway, let's talk about the components.
Let's tell them why it's good value.
We'll tell them why it might be good value. Components and art design. So we talk about that. In the box, you get some very sort of embiggened components. Everything's very big.
Yeah.
Right? You get a big player board.
Bright, bold, colourful.
Yeah, everything is bright. Everything is colourful. Everything is bold. And everything is large.
Big tarot cards. Big, chunky tiles. Big tokens.
Big god tokens. Big everything, really. Good, chunky stuff. Nothing super extravagant, but it all works fine and very nice, big, bright, colourful artwork.
Yeah, I really like the box art. It's so eye-catching. It reminds me slightly of, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's the Clash of Titans mobile game, this kind of exaggerated caricature of people.
Yeah.
These Greek gods or Spartans or whatever it is. Loads of gold, loads of bright blue skies, bright green grass, sand dunes and deserts looking.
Here you go. So really Paul Maffion is also credited on King of Tokyo.
Oh, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Very similar art style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you can see it when it's obviously sort of pointed out. Yeah.
It's got a very like Olympiad kind of vibe, right? There's a dude with this 3-point stance about to do something heroic. Very nice indeed. Yeah. I will say, I don't think the artwork is for everybody. It looks, it's very cartoony.
Yeah. Well, if you conjure up, you know, sort of images of how the monsters look in King of Tokyo, it's the same sort of style. Everything's a little bit sort of caricatured, right? Big chiseled heroic heroes and sort of kind of blocky, oversized monsters.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, everyone's got 40 pounds more muscle on them than they really should.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly that. Yeah, how do you feel about the cards? These like giant tarot cards. There's not a lot of cards in the game and they get used quite a lot.
I always think, I'm expecting there to be more than there are, but
yeah, me too.
For what it achieves, I think it's absolutely fine.
I think there's only like 15 cards. I think they cycle through, in a four-player game, they cycle through every three rounds.
Okay, that sounds about right.
Yeah, something. You know, so there's not a huge variety in the number of cards. There's no variety in the artwork. The artwork matches up with the action that you select. Hmm.
But they serve their purpose fantastically well.
Yeah,
which is the key point, then
art is sort of mixed and matched with the different sizes of tiles, right? So you get variety in how the tiles, how the cards behave when you resolve them, but artwork-wise, they don't vary hugely. Yeah.
If there was like more of a purpose for the cards other than just as an action selection, you might think maybe the cards should be more varied, but they do exactly what they need to do.
You look at the card in the market, you grab a card, you immediately discard the card.
Yeah, exactly. You don't actually hold the cards as a hand of cards or anything. No. They're just serving the purpose of an action and then they're discarded for the end of the turn. So.
Precisely that. Any other comments on the rest of the components? I mean, you have some little meeples, which are like soldiers, right?
Little hoplite soldiers.
And then your generic, was it plastic cut gem that you see?
Yeah, the same cut of little plastic gemstone that is used in every single Euro game ever made.
That Chinese factory must literally never stop pumping
out.
They
just keep churning them
resin
out.
Lumps.
Oh, yeah.
Lumps of
these ones are nice and shiny and gold.
They're lovely.
Exactly. Yeah, very nice indeed.
Or a calcum.
Yeah, the terrain tiles are really cool. So you've got this map. You've got about 25 to 30 circular tile spaces effectively, which you're looking to populate throughout the game, and upon those you put either a 1, 2, or 3 circle, and they're connected in a line, a terrain piece with varying artwork on.
So it's probably worth highlighting that the player boards are double-sided, right? There's a side of the player boards where everyone has the same layout,
and there's a place
where everyone gets a slightly different varying layout to make it a little bit more asymmetrical
and more difficult as well. More difficult layout.
It's certainly trickier to place your tiles correctly. You can easily sort of wall yourself off either involuntarily through the actions that are available, or if you're not paying attention, you can sort of block yourself in and then realize that you've made a mistake.
Overall, I'm super happy with the quality of the pieces.
Something I didn't notice on the first playthrough, but the what are they called?
When you forge
an Orichalcum token,
yes,
it's a massive chunky victory point token, and you only need 5 to win the game, right? Yeah. So on one side, it's the Orichalcum token. On the other side, it's a representation of you building a temple, which is also worth a victory point.
It's just another
Be Orichalcum tokens. They didn't need to have different art on both sides. It's just a nice little extra.
It's a nice addition, yeah. It shows how you got your points, which is nice, and all will become clearer as we go through this podcast. You do get some custom dice, and I love custom dice.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically a D6 with a skull on it.
It's 1, 2, 4, 5, the death skull, and then the Mario symbol, right?
That's right. Yeah, the weird 3, which looks like the Mario.
It's just the typeface, the font, whatever you want to call it. It just looks perfectly like a Mario M.
It very much looks like a Mario.
Particularly because it's a red dice and a white letter.
There you go, there's your Mario M.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
I'll make sure there's a picture online.
Absolutely.
On our Insta and Facebook. So check that out.
How would you rate the production, considering what you pay for it? 35-ish quid.
I think it's great for the price.
Yeah.
Yeah, great really for the price point. And something that you mentioned right at the beginning, nice and easy setup. There's not a huge variety of components, so
not
it's relatively easy.
Stuff,
and you get, get a couple of bags to sort your pieces into, like the little cloth bags, right? Yeah, they could just give you little crappy plastic bags for everything, or nothing at all. But yeah, the pieces that you need to regularly draw out or draft out,
mm-hmm,
are in little cloth bags, which is just a nice little extra that you don't get in every game.
And as I've just moved the box to look at something, I've heard the solid metal coin rattling in the bottom, which I don't know if that's an early release exclusive.
I don't know what that was for. I'm still not entirely sure. There's a metal coin.
Bludgeoning your unwitting opponent.
Yeah. It's like maybe it's like that's the fifth point you should use, right? The winning
maybe,
point.
The winning point. The
yeah.
Maybe it's that.
But yeah, you get a nice little glossary, which... Because it's basically iconography for everything. There's not really words anywhere in this game.
It's language independent.
No, words. There's no words on the boards or the cards or anything on the table at all.
Yes, once you know the rules.
Yeah, alongside your rule book, you've got this double-sided glossary page which tells you what each token does with if you don't understand the symbology. I think the symbology, though, is very clear. And everything,
you know what every space
and every tile does.
There's not that many to pick from.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, very good symbology. And that's something that's really worth pointing out, actually, Tom, that is language independent. Once you do know the rules, you don't need to reference anything. You can just look at the symbols and it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Everything is very, very clear in that respect. I'd rate the production, considering the price of it, it's a good 5 out of 5 for me. I've got no issues with that.
I don't think I'd argue for £30 to £35 on that.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one. Tom, any arguments?
No.
At least not on this
just
point.
Just kicking my microphone, don't mind me.
Right, okay, so let's talk about the core mechanics of the game. Tom, you won this one. How'd you win, Orichalcum?
By having more points than everyone else.
In specifically having...
Five points. Which doesn't sound like very many.
Sounds like
and
a walk
it's
in
not
the park,
a particularly
right?
long game. It's a race to 5 points, but you can only get points in one of three ways.
Exactly. Right?
So the first way, as previously mentioned, is to claim one of the victory point tokens by forging an Orichalcum token.
Yes.
Which is basically to take the build action, spend 5 Orichalcum resources, and you get a victory point.
And that is it.
That's it.
It slots super satisfyingly into a
little recesses in the top of the board. Yeah, nice little production thing.
The other way that you might be able to win points is by building a temple. As we talked about, there are little tiles that you're going to be putting on your island. This is something of a tile-laying game.
It is, yeah.
And
we said it, mini 4X.
Yeah, exactly, mini 4X, exactly. So you're going to put tiles on your board, and if you can create a contiguous grouping of 4 different types of terrain...
And there's 5 in the game?
I believe so.
Five, but one of them is wild.
One of them is a wild, yeah. 4 different types of terrain, or wild terrain. You can build a temple upon it, and that temple is a point.
Mm. Build yourself a glorious temple district with 4 temples.
Like Tom did. And Tom, what's the third way that you might get points?
The third way, rather than diversifying your terrain types and having 4 different, if you get 3 or more of the same terrain type touching, you will gain the favour of a god or a titan. There's 4 of these in the game, 1 for each of the main terrain types. So, for example, I get 3 or more dune or desert pieces all touching on my map. I gain the favour of the god, and that is a temporary, because someone else might take it from you, a temporary victory point.
Because the gods are fickle.
They are so fickle. To the point that when we did first play this, I had 2 of them, and they both went in 1 round. Because these guys stole them from me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Each of these gods or titans not only acts as a victory point in and of themselves while you hold them, but also has a bonus kind of power-up action. So
it's like an improved version of one of the actions.
So there's
that you
can 4
take.
Main actions in the game. So you've got fighting, building, or generating either Populous or Orichalcum. And each of these will allow you to essentially double up on one of those.
One of those,
the exception being the fighting one, which is just an instant kill.
One of
the
ones. Great.
You just kill the guy that you're fighting.
Whilst you're taking said action, you just flip the token over. And these, again, are really big, bold, almost like 2-inch square tokens that you have sat on top of your board. Flip it over and you get to take that bonus on your turn.
Mm.
With... tended to find that you use it before you lose it because you do quite
use
often
it because they might just
these
get
gods around.
Yeah, snatched from you quite quickly.
Absolutely.
You can only generally, at least to start with, only hold one of these gods in your bank of 5 points. There are options, and we'll describe in a second how you might gain more of those. But yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic to have a point which might leave you at some point.
Moving victory points is fun, yeah. So temporary victory
kind
points.
Kind of want to work towards some fairly solid points, the ones that you've forged and built temples for, and then maybe steal your last point by gaining the favour of a god.
I think so. That seems reasonable to me. I like the idea of 5 points to win. That's a really nice low number, which is unusual in games, I think. It's not often that you'll get a game where you win at 5 or something as low as that.
Yeah, the only other game I can think of that's quite considerably so low is Twilight Imperium. It's like, what, 8 points or something?
Ten, but it will take you as many hours.
Yeah, each one takes you a little long. So this isn't, I did this and I gained 4 points from it. Like, I did one thing that got me a point. I think at most you can get 2 points in a turn unless you're very...
I suppose you could theoretically snatch a god with your tile placement and then do a double build.
True.
So maybe 3 points. Yeah. If you're super lucky.
You'd have to be very, very well placed.
Oh,
that'd
be perfectly placed, yeah.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Absolutely. But yeah, I like the idea of that. Just 5 points. And there's only three ways of getting points. So everything's pretty clear in terms of objectives, which is nice.
So the turn structure is really simple, right?
Yeah, very simple.
Everything is geared towards trying to grab one of those points. But ultimately, you have a market
cascading
of
market
action
load.
Cards. Yeah, a falling market of action cards where you pick an action that's available to you. Every card has two sort of facets to it. One is the tile that you will need to place on your board that Simon had mentioned is sort of a 1, 2, or 3 contiguous straight line piece with different terrain types on it.
The terrain that's going to expand your map in one way or another.
Yeah. So you're trying to arrange those tiles potentially for building a temple on, for example.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
The other half of the card tells you what action that you take, which again is generating troops or Orichalcum or fighting monsters or
building something.
So it's fairly straightforward until you sort of then work out how you try and piece those two things together to be efficient.
And then you get to choose to do a second action using the resources you've generated.
You may take a second action after you resolve the first one.
So there might be a really desirous piece of terrain that you want. It'll fit perfectly in your landscape and complete that map of four different token spaces you need. But it'll also have an action associated with it that has absolutely zero purpose for you.
Yeah.
Or it might be that some of the spaces have a volcano space. This is the wild terrain, but also come with a monster. Yeah. And you might not want to fight that monster. If you do take the monster, you have to kill it before you can win as well. So that's another bit of decision space.
You can't win while you've got monsters.
One of the buildings lets you build while you have monsters, but not win while you have monsters.
Correct. Yeah. There's lots of little crunchy decisions and not a huge amount of rules weight, I think, personally. I mean, it's fairly easy to understand, but the complexity definitely comes in the decision space. And it's really, I pick the card that I want, and then I choose what my second action is going to be. Mm. It doesn't seem like a lot, but there's a lot in that.
Yeah,
there's a huge amount within that.
I think the one for me mostly is the build action. The build action is sort of like a real pivot point of the game because you grab a tile, you place a tile on your board, and then when you're taking the build action, you are covering up portions of the tiles that you've placed.
Yes.
Which may be in order to where you've got four matching terrain, four of the different types of terrain, you can build a temple, or if you've got matching terrains, you can use it to grab gods.
Yeah.
But you're also potentially covering up terrains that would stop you from doing those things later on to, for example, build additional barracks that allow you to recruit more troops, which then let you do more stuff later on. Yeah, so it's like a balance in the engine building.
Yeah, you temper your progress on one side whilst allowing you more opportunity on another side. It's a really clever balance, I think.
Absolutely. I think quite a lot of the game is actually within the building part of the rules. So a lot of the buildings that you might get by using the build action are super useful.
They're
all really useful.
There's some really super funky stuff in there.
Yeah, and they'll break rules in various ways. They'll make your second action more efficient, for example, because normally you have to spend two of a resource to do an additional action.
Yep.
But some of the buildings will let you do an extra action for one resource. Mm. Some will give you more Orichalcum when you kill monsters.
More efficient ways of killing monsters.
Yeah, more efficient ways of killing monsters, exactly. They make the dice
you can hold more
better.
Gods.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah, hold the favor of more gods.
So the dice improvement one is really cool. It's basically a building that you have potential to build throughout the game. And for each dice face, you turn that dice face into an instant kill. So it starts with the 6 being an instant kill. And then I picked up the catapult, so a 1 also becomes an instant kill. Tom had, I think, 2 and 4.
The 1 became an instant kill. So I had a 1 was an instant kill, a 6 was an instant kill, and then I was regularly fighting monsters that were only strength 4.
So if you rolled a 1, a 4, a 5, or a 6, you'd definitely kill the monster. So you had such a good chance. And you can throw, if you've got extra hoplites on your board, you can throw them into the fight as an extra dice, so you can double your chances in that regard.
I really like how the fighting works in this game. It doesn't feel bad when you roll badly. you lose out on winning the fight that turn. But if you've committed additional hoplites to the fight, who give you extra dice to roll, they don't go anywhere. You can just use them again next time. You can't take them back.
No,
they're staying committed to the fight,
but the benefit remains.
Stay there until you finally kill the monster, and then they retire gracefully to the ground.
Yeah, that's right.
I was going to say Valhalla, but wrong area, wrong mythology.
Elysium.
Wrong mythology.
No, wait, no, that's Roman, Greek. Can't remember.
No, but yeah, circling back around. So lots of options to help kind of fighting, and there's some that if you do win the fight, you gain that. Then get bonuses for killing the monsters on top of what the monster itself has. But one of the really cool buildings is the you may have the favor of more than one god.
Which is great.
So normally, if you've already have one of these four god tokens as a victory point and you would gain another, you have to replace the one you have. There are buildings in the game which allow you to hold a second one or potentially even
a third one.
So you might have three out of your 5 points as victory points from the god's favors. All of which are subject to being taken from you at a moment's notice, depending on the terrain or other people's shenanigans and turn taking. So it's a really interesting decision space on what you buy and what you build and at what point you choose to do so.
Yeah, and two or three carefully chosen buildings can really create a very powerful engine.
Yeah, which is, they're small engines, right?
Yes.
It's not a very, very complex engine builder. No. It's maybe two or three pieces of a puzzle that you can try and get working together to more efficiently generate a resource that will then allow you to take second actions at optimal times to be slightly more efficient than your opponents to get your victory points, and then you win.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's only 5 points.
Absolutely. And just another mention on the fighting. I like that it's the only real bit of randomness, right? Okay, you've got the actions which come out and how the tiles work, but everything is open information. So, but you throw some dice, but it doesn't feel, as you say, it's not too much. You can always mitigate the randomness by chucking extra hoplites in the mincer to give you extra dice. Again, it doesn't feel bad.
Here you go. This game was 9 rounds.
There you go.
That's it. Nine action choices or card choices for actions, and then the potential to take a second action. That's it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on the mechanisms of the game there? Sort of blitz through it, but it's got a wonderful decision space, and it's crunchy, but it's not complex.
No, there's great.
Yeah.
There's great, I think, reward to be had in the timing of how you do things. You pick the right action, you get a tile that can cascade into grabbing the favor of a god, then you can take an action, benefit from that god immediately, potentially grab like a point or two, and there might be like a 2 or 3 point swing in it at the last minute, and then you can steal it out from someone's nose.
Absolutely.
Yeah, as you say, it's not particularly complex to learn. The complexity is in the playing of it, and the more we play, I think the more we get out of
definitely
the possibilities. But yeah, it might be, oh, I pick this terrain tile up, that'll complete this group of three, I can claim this god's favor, but it'll come with a monster, but then the action itself is to fight, so I'm going to then fight the monster, and then in having that monster, that's my second monster, I can then spend that to take a bonus action to buy an Auric Alchem token, and that's the win.
Defeating monsters themselves give you rewards immediately and become resources you can spend for the extra actions.
So you get these really cool kind of cascading chains of actions that you may have been able to plan ahead. You might just luck into and go, that worked out fantastically well.
Something I really like is that the extra actions is just a magic number of two. Like two of a resource allows you to take the extra action. Two hoplites, two Auric Alchem, or two monsters slain, take an extra action.
Yep.
Really, really easy to understand. Really wonderful decision spaces and not too much to get your head around. Where would you put the complexity of Auric Alchem then? How would you rate it? Five being the
two
heavy
and a
one
half.
Being,
I think sort of you could play this quite happily at a two and a half, but there's plenty of room for strategizing.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
lots of potential points that you can pivot around
and
try and predict what
a
people are doing.
Similar kind of level of depth of decisions. So we need to kind of, I don't want this to sound kind of arrogant in this, but we might play as a group together at a slightly higher level than it needs to be played.
Probably.
Because we're looking at everyone else's, you know, we're looking
constantly
at Tom.
Trying to work out how to screw with someone else.
If we don't do this, Tom will win next round. Okay, I need to work on what partly what will come out and then go, okay, and you need to make sure you don't take that, so yes. I can take that, so I can then beat the monster that will take the thing from Tom that will win.
There was a little bit of an element of like the flop of the cards that come out in the market, right?
Yeah. But you could definitely play, and I think, definitely 2 to 2.5 in terms of complexity. You can play this and just go, I'm going to see if I can win a point this round.
Yeah.
I think and rinse thing. And repeat. And if you're with a group that were all of a similar familiarity, absolutely.
Mm.
And it's one that you can pick up that level of complexity as you play it. It's not one you need to start with.
That's it.
You don't have to go into this
game.
Oh, I need a real strategy.
Here. And you don't need to really terribly worry about what other people are doing. They may take the action that you wanted. Doesn't really matter.
Oh, yeah, you guys screwed me out of the train I needed 3 rounds in a row. That's how it comes.
You can, like, something we haven't mentioned, actually. The first player token per each round jumps to the player with the most hoplites at the end of the round.
Yeah.
And hoplites come and go real quickly.
Yeah, they do.
So there is an element of trying to work out who's going to go first, because then you get your second or third choice, potentially, of the actions that come out next round.
And that's important.
You don't necessarily know what the actions are that are going to come out on the flop. But you could force someone to go last and give them the worst possible choice.
Absolutely. Well, sometimes you want to go last because you want the kind of expensive one, because the market gets more expensive.
It cascades, right, yeah.
So the first two spaces, the first two options are free. The next two options, you have to pay a guy to pick up.
A hoplite, yeah.
And the very top end, a four-player game, the last two spaces. In a three-player game, the last space, because the last one isn't used. That'll cost you two guys. So if you really want the one that's just come out, you have to pay two of your hoplites. You might not have those, so you might want to go last to have that slide down into a position you're able to pick it up.
So you can get the terrain that you want.
Wait it out, hope that it falls into the free zone.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I think out of the box, this is probably about two complexity, but I've used this phrase a lot, but this is one of those games that really rewards repeat play.
You can
get deep in it. You can start doing counterplays against people. It's a real, real wonderful one, and that'll push that somewhere between 2.5 and 3, I think, eventually.
And because
over time.
It's a shorter game up to, and really, I don't think we've ever gone beyond an hour.
No, never.
You can rattle out 2-3 games potentially back to back, or throw it in at the beginning or end of a games night without it taking up a lot of time.
This, space. 5 minute setup.
This is this is in the realm of palate cleanser for sure. Between other more complicated
games.
It's
like a deep...
It's a slightly deeper palate cleanser.
Yeah it's deep not, clean. It's not necessarily what I know I use this term.
It's certainly
arcade-y.
Not.
It's not necessarily an arcade-y game, but it's fairly close.
Yeah, it's somewhere there. It's not a filler.
You could play it without a brain, though.
Yeah, you could do this as an intro game to an evening for sure, and get you right in the mood for it. It's a good one. Alrighty, so let's talk about the theme gameplay interaction. Does the gameplay feel thematic? Does it work together with the theme? And the theme being sort of ancient Greek mythology, mining for auric alchem, etc.
The only thing I think that I feel is particularly thematic about this is how the gods are fickle and switch sides constantly.
I like that
an
awful lot. I do have to say, I just want to underline how much I love the idea of the temporary points, which is the gods.
The uncertainty of it is very much a positive rather than a negative. It might come across
real,
as
real, real, real positive. Yeah. So you're like, oh, I've got this point, but this could literally go any second.
The rest of it could really be any sort of mini 4X setting. It could be fantasy. It could be sort of a more Eastern European medieval setting or ancient Japan or anything like that.
I think you're right,
Sci-fi would fit, D&D
sci-fi.
Type.
Anything really, you could put a badge on this.
It's certainly, it's a Euro game, right? And you could put anything on it.
I've come here, oh no, there's dragons. I've come here, oh no, there's aliens. I've come here, oh no, there's Oni and
samurai and shit.
The only thing that I think particularly matches is the side-switching favor of the gods thing.
Yes, and I suppose the emphasis on the resource, which is auric alchem, of which that it's named after. But again, that could be any resource. You can call it steel,
plasma units, some kind of I don't know.
I do love the theme. I like Greek mythology. It's a wonderful theme generally.
I think it suits perfectly well.
Yeah,
it really does
suit.
Yeah, it's great.
Well.
Yeah.
But it
kind of hints at without purely being the classic Greek stuff. This is probably a Minotaur. This is probably a Medusa. This is probably a Cyclops.
I'm fighting some monsters.
Not necessarily explicitly so, I don't think.
I agree.
That's fine.
Yeah, relatively light wash, but it's a great theme anyway. How do you feel about the turn length and the game flow? I think once you get it down, it's pretty snappy.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, your turn can... If you've scoped what's your likely pick going to be and someone immediately ahead of you doesn't nab it, you can have your turn planned before it gets to you easily.
And you can be done pretty quick. You're like, okay, I take this terrain, I do this action, my second action is to build a point, I'm done.
Yeah.
Bam.
Yeah, my desert and forest is going to go here next to my dunes and my water. The action is to produce people. That's as many as, you know, match your number of tiles to the action.
Hmm.
And then I'm going to choose to build on the space I've just made. And yep. That's the turn. As long as it's taking me to describe it, is as long as it takes to do it.
Yeah, that's a pretty good flow.
You might spend more time thinking about your options because there's, you know, like the balance between placing a tile and then covering it up or leaving it uncovered so you have the terrain for the matching sets for temples or whatever.
Yeah, it's in a tight game, you'll take a little longer, but you're not going to be sitting there for 5 minutes at a time going,
Certainly the first few rounds, you won't worry about it at all. It's take a tile, do a thing. The thing will be resolved nice and quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it really is a nice, snappy turn length. And the game flows very, very nicely indeed from round to round. Round end cleanup is quick. Put a couple more tiles out, put some more cards out, put some more buildings out. A couple of seconds and you're done. The game certainly does respect your time. It's a very quick setup and tear down. Not a huge amount of components, but enough to get you thinking. In terms of the rules clarity, pretty good. I like the fact that there is this double-sided sort of cheat sheet, which stands like the turn summary.
Really, the only thing you need is the building tiles, because I've got no words on them. So knowing what the building tiles do, and of some which the there's what, rewards. 10?
Yeah,
10 building tiles?
Yeah, I think so.
That's not that much.
Yeah, and just a couple of symbols. And that double-sided cheat sheet, once you know the rules, is everything you'll ever need to play the game, apart from the setup. But that is pretty much it. Right, we've come to the end, I guess. Let's go to the final thoughts for Orichalcum. What do you like most about it?
Do love me some terrain tile placing, as you well know.
Tile placement is a mechanism that I constantly underrate in my own mind, but I always really bloody enjoy, like, a lot. It's a cracking mechanism, and it's great.
We say tile placement. It's probably worth noting that the tiles are all straight. They're all straight lines.
Yeah.
So it's not like your Tetronomo style
or
games,
a square or whatever,
where you have lots of different shapes and sizes or weird shapes. It's so straight line 1, 2, or 3, which limits the tile placement headache, but not necessarily in a bad way.
True.
Yeah, you might end up with only having an option of picking a 1 or a 2, so literally a circle or, you know, a slight lozenge. That might be because there's nothing else available to you that you can afford. It might be that that's all that the market holds. Or it might be that you've only got single spaces left because you've chosen some wacky layout beforehand. Yeah. And, the two sides of the game board do allow you different maps. I think the more simple side is pretty generous in terms of not closing down spaces very easily.
There's a lot of sort of like two columns side by side, so you have more flexibility with where you place your tiles.
Nice wide runs. But it's a nice little puzzle element, and then choosing, as Tom said, whether to cover those spaces with buildings which give you immediate or future benefits, or leaving them open to allow you to build temples.
Yep.
And Tom won the game with 4 out of 5 temples built for his point,
which was amazing.
Just insane, honestly. built no buildings.
Glorious temple district.
Yeah, it's great planning, mate. Like, just
most of my island is a temple district. I have one space that I could have built on.
But it shows you the flexibility in the game, because Wayne was building and building and building and getting power up after power up.
Wayne built a massive barracks to churn out
people. So the opportunity to have an army to go and fight stuff with, and then, you know, increase his opportunity to kill monsters was great, but
I took all the monsters.
I was competing with monsters for Tom, and
at the same rate, Tom was just building temple spaces.
So. Absolutely. Yeah.
I love the decision space on the cards, the multifaceted cards. Mm. You may see a tile that comes out that you really, really want, because you can place it and get optimal sort of set of 4, or you could potentially snatch a god from someone, but it might have the wrong action on it.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. Or you might have the action that you want, but all of the tiles are bad. Or it's a tile that has a monster on it, and you've got no guys, and you can't fight that monster, so you know you can't win.
Mm.
Which is... that's where all the sort of thinkiness comes from for me. That and the building choices, you know, which tiles you cover up and when.
Yeah.
I think it's really clever. And certainly the first time we played it, I didn't really appreciate that. I put, like, various things in corners that would never be able to turn into sets of 4.
Yeah.
I tried to focus on the sets of 4 this time, which worked.
I think it worked great. I mean, you're planning to have specific variety in your terrain to build temples is a great strategy. You've covered such great points, I think, in terms of things that I really like about the game too. So I'll just quickly pivot and just talk about how I really enjoy how one or two buildings can shape an entire strategy. So you can literally pick one or two of the buildings from the like 10 or so different types, and I can really point you. If you just get the ones which make fighting easier, then obviously you're going to be more inclined to fight more.
Yeah, I think the first building I built was make fighting easier. So then I'm like, cool, monsters. Come at me, bro.
Come at me, bro. Exactly. Or if you pick up the one early that lets you get a second god, you might be looking at building contiguous streaks of the same terrain and trying to leverage all of the god's powers, which is really cool. Is there anything you didn't like about it?
Nothing's springing out to me, honestly. It's such a simple game in so many aspects that there's very little to be able to not like. I would say that it wouldn't actually be to everyone's temperament and favour, but
I think because
in terms of the design, I don't think there's anything.
Who
really
would you recommend it for? Well, I guess
I think because there's a little bit of a gotcha element in snatching the favour of the gods away. Yes. Or in taking a tile or a building that someone else might want, you might say that is a feels bad sort of thing, but
it's very gently interactive.
The game very easily pivots into other options. I don't think it's particularly bad.
Yeah, there's the optimum choice when you see the five options at the start of the round, and you might go, oh, I really need that one. That'll be my... But you're not going to get left with stuff that you can never do anything with.
Correct.
It's just less than optimum, and that's true of so many games. It can't be pointed out as a downfall of this particular one in any fashion.
I certainly wouldn't say that this is a very aggro, aggressive, interactive game. There's player interaction here, but it's mostly through denial, right? Which is like in a lot of Euro games where you have drafting of something, some sort of open draft.
Yeah. I wanted to get to those resources first. I wanted to claim that title. I wanted
that thing.
That.
Yeah, I can't directly zap your guys. I can potentially deny you more optimal options
and
slowly pull ahead over time.
Precisely that. And like many games with this ilk, it is an efficiency puzzle. And if you are slightly more efficient and build, as you said, Tom, a very small engine to help you generate resources and use them properly, then you'll probably win and get to those 5 points.
Yeah. I mean, I built no additional resource generators in this game.
You just
but I managed to do just about the right things to keep my economy going to be able to build the temples. I focused on the tile placement, didn't worry too much about the actions. I just went for the correct correlation of terrains, and that was it. That was enough.
It was beautiful. Worked very well indeed. Let's talk about your final word, your final conclusion, and what your final rating is for Orichalcum.
4 out of 5. Definitely give it a go. Even if you think the theme doesn't potentially suit you, you think it looks too cartoony, give the gameplay a go. You're not going to lose more than an hour. And if you hate it, then, I mean, sorry, but...
Be surprised.
I'd be genuinely surprised.
Sorry, you're wrong.
I mean, each to their own. As I say, it's not going to suit everyone. Don't look at the box art, which I genuinely think is very cool, and go, nah, kids game. Looks cartoony, it's going to be stupid. It's a great little game. Do think that's a good one.
The final world is temple
Built.
Or temples. I think there's plenty of depth here that we could replay this a whole bunch of times. I'd easily call it a 4, maybe slightly better.
Nice. I like it. I think I'll join the party with a 4 out of 5. I think it's a wonderful game. There is loads to like. It is easy to learn but hard to master. That classic Othello type vibe, right? It's very, very, very good. There's not a massively high ceiling, so it's not like someone's gonna, be an expert at this game and kill everybody in the first two turns.
There's enough random elements, random card flop that comes out with the action economy, random tiles that come out.
Is enough balance
dice
in there.
Rolling, there's a bit of dice roll swinginess.
Absolutely. If you're good at it, you'll probably win. But yeah, there's enough there to make it fair for everybody.
Just build lots of temples.
Yeah, it's just a really, really cracking game. I think it's a wonderful design, and I'm really glad I picked it up. And for £35 or your local equivalent, you really can't go too far
wrong. I think it's very good
for
the price.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
That is our final word on Auric Alchem. So thanks for listening to Board Stupid. You can subscribe to us to get updates and future episodes of the show delivered directly to your
future
ear
holes.
Your favourite podcast service. You can find us on our very busy and excellent Instagram page, run mostly by wonderful Simon, and also you can find us on YouTube. And as I've moved house and I have a nice little area where I can set my games up and camera, you'll see some more stuff on that hopefully soon.
Put stuff on the table, then cover it up and film it at your leisure.
Exactly. And you can also find all of our industry content on there, which we love doing, chatting to people about their games. And please do go check out some interviews and things like that. If you've got any feedback, comments or questions, stick it in the comments below, because we'd love to hear from you. Have you played Auric Alchem? Do we now stand amidst the glorious temple district like Tom, or a nightmarish mishmash of volcanic islands? More like me, I think.
This is fine.
Have the monsters overrun your lands or been laid to waste by your armies? Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you again real soon.
This is madness.
Madness.
This is Auric Alchem.